From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk words and the people who gave their names to them. Eponyms. I'm Fletcher Powell. As far as I know, no words named after me specifically, but I am host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey, Kathy. Hey, Ross. We are ready to jump off today with an email from Ed in Vancouver following up on something we talked about a few weeks ago, the third conditional, which everybody remembers. I'm certain that everybody knows exactly what the third conditional is, and we will have to do no explaining whatsoever, right? Tell me. Remind me, please.
Third conditional, their phrases that describe past situations, but hypothetical past situations, and their hypothetical results.
Oh, so this was like when we said, like, if I would have, well.
Correct.
That's the incorrect one.
Right, exactly. If I had known, then I would have gone to the store or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And we basically said we didn't really mind. It should be, as you said, Fletcher, if we had done this, we would, you know, whatever. We didn't mind if we would have done this.
Right.
We said that's incorrect, but it didn't amazingly bother us.
Yeah.
Now, Ed said he was somewhat disappointed because he thought it was clearly wrong. And then we emailed him a long letter, and I threw in Latin and Greek to show how erudite we were.
Amazing. Latin? You?
Yeah. And how, like, you know, Latin, what was once considered correct in Latin, then changed into vulgar Latin, and then it changed into French. And, you know, the language changed, and things that were once considered horribly incorrect are now seen as correct. And we have purists in modern French, which is a Latin derivative, or modern Greek saying, oh, you should not say this, whereas in ancient Greek, you know, I mean, there are huge differences. So I defended that. And Kathy and you, we all agreed it's okay, even though it's wrong.
Right. And let me just make it even more explicit or to repeat what you said, just so people who maybe didn't catch that can understand. It's technically incorrect to say, if I would have known, I would have gone to the store.
Right.
As Ross mentioned, you should say, if I had known, I would have gone to the store or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
No would haves in the first part.
In the first part.
No would haves in the if.
Right.
That's the key. And it's egregiously wrong. And Ed pointed that out. And we all agreed, okay, maybe it's egregiously wrong. Times change, tastes change.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're okay with how it sounds. Anyway, we went to a dinner. My daughter-in-law was in town, and I was talking to her, and I said, you know, we got this letter from this man, Ed, in Vancouver, who, you know, was horrified, or was not happy that we think it was okay. And she said, what is it exactly? So I told her, and she was absolutely horrified. She said, that's so wrong.
How can you say
that's okay? Yes.
Uh-huh.
She said, how can you say that? It should be if I had done X, Y, or Z. So what interested me the most about this whole thing is, and I realize this, I don't really hear it as incorrect when I hear it.
No, me neither.
I instantly understand what it means. And if I analyze it, I realize it's wrong. But I don't hear it as wrong.
But
and is that...
I mean, like, I think...
I mean, I know it's wrong. I don't mean it that way.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And maybe we should express it yet again. We know that it's technically wrong.
Yes.
But I think it goes to, like, a bigger conversation we often have, which is, what does it mean to be right? I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. technically mm-hmm. you could be right, but what's the point of all of this? It's to communicate. This is something that people say all over the place all the time now. It doesn't, there's no ambiguity introduced when we say this. Mm-mm. Is there?
Okay. I see Kathy champing at the bit, not chomping, champing, which uh-huh. is more correct. Kathy, why don't you champ at the bit and bring in what you're about to bring in? I can see you wanting to do it.
Well, I was just going to say, I have no problem about it, but I think, I mean, Ross, you keep saying that I don't hear it as wrong. And I think that's still the key. I think that's really the key to a great degree. Fletcher,
yes.
You're absolutely right. It's we understand what's being said. The communication is not being hampered in any sense of the word. I mean, but then, I mean, when someone says, I brung that, or I drug him, I drug the dead body across the floor, which is a little horrible.
That's a little horrifying there, Ken.
Sorry.
What are you doing in Spain anyway?
Yeah.
What exactly are you doing over there? Yeah.
You notice that my husband's not around.
Yeah, I know. I know. And I, outside, but I, mean, I think I there's think a new trench.
Yeah. Yeah, we did have a kid over helping in the garden today.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's really the key. I mean, like, we won't like none of us would say, "Oh, it's okay to say wrong," would we? I wouldn't.
No, I would
Fletcher,
correct.
What about you?
Not typically.
Yeah,
I think it depends on who's talking to who, whom, who's talking to whom. But yeah, I mean, typically in your standard accepted English, you wouldn't say that that's okay.
No, and I think in this case, though, I was sort of thinking more about it. And I think we have a hierarchy of things or register of things that we think are wrong and that are not acceptable, and things that we think are quasi-acceptable, and things that we think are fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would put the would have as, I would actually lean still towards unacceptable. I would never use it in print. If I hear it, it doesn't grate on me the same way that brung does. Or for that matter, my daughter-in-law said, I'm going to go lay down.
Mm-hmm.
And that immediately triggers something in me. It's
really?
Lie down.
You know what that triggers in me? It triggers, oh, wait, should it be lay or lie? Wait, is it lay or lie?
Oh, that's
is
interesting.
Lay or
oh,
lie?
That's really
that's
interesting,
it, that's what
too.
It triggers, yeah, because I always have to remember which is which. And so, like, at that point.
But here we go again, though. We have definite, like, we have hierarchies of what we consider, like Kathy just said, I think we all agree brung is bad. I think some of us think, I'm going to go lay down is okay. Others of us don't like it.
I hate it.
But
yeah,
look,
that's one that bothers me. But
I mean, brung is bad to us. There are plenty of people who are going to say to another person in their social circle, I had brung this, and neither one of them mm-hmm. is going to think anything of it, and they've communicated perfectly well.
Well, here we go back to register, and I think also we go back to the difference between writing and speaking. I will cut a lot of slack for conversation that I don't think I would cut for, say, like the New York Times mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
We do need to have some, and we went back and forth at dinner on this too, because we do need to have some standards. She speaks French really well. I speak French not really well. And, you know, to get by in Quebec, it's good to have relatively grammatically correct French. It mm-hmm. helps a mm-hmm. lot. Not to, and then I think in that case in English, we have that same thing. We need to like decide which rules we think we can't just like go anything counts.
Yeah.
I mean, Kathy, years ago when Alex was born, my son was born, Kathy said, let's try an experiment. Let's call dogs cats, cats dogs, and see what happens. And clearly that's like not a good thing to have done. And Kathy didn't do it.
Well, that creates actual problems.
But,
though,
yeah,
this the third condition. Look, I'm sorry to people like Ed who are, you know, understandably very interested in keeping this third conditional idea around. But if you have to go and explain what the third conditional is to people to get them to not use the word would mm-hmm. in the first part of their sentence, like, what do you mm-hmm. even what are we doing here? So many people around us say, I would have. I do. I didn't know about this third conditional thing until we talked about mm-hmm. it a few weeks ago. And I don't know what it's doing if we insist on sticking to that.
Well, I'm going to throw something else in, which we basically came to a conclusion about. In a very interesting way, it's become sort of an idiom. And like, there, for example, there are prepositional idioms, by accident, for example. Mm-hmm. The preposition by comes in there. And with my son, I noticed, we noticed that when he was a kid, he kept saying on accident.
Sure. Yeah,
we've talked about this.
And
we've talked about this.
And basically that's become the thing, but on or by doesn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. They're not both kind of like weirdly, we understand what it means, but you don't really need, the preposition doesn't really have a meaning in there. It just, we know what it means. And in a weird way, I think we three of us hear, if I would have done that, as almost like an idiom. We know exactly what it means.
Yeah.
And we don't analyze it grammatically. We don't care about a grammar mm-hmm. here. We're hearing it as, if I would have done that, if I had done that, same thing, bah. That's what we hear, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think also the three of us have agreed on this in the past. The more we look at language, the more we discuss it, the less prescriptive we've all gotten.
For sure.
Yes.
I mean, each of us has gotten much less prescriptive.
Yep.
I know I have, and I used to be much more of a stickler, and I am not anymore. And I actually have gotten to the point where I get irritated sometimes when someone overstickles.
Mm-hmm. Overstickles. So
well said. I like that.
Yes.
I agree. People do stickle too much, I think, nowadays. Yeah.
I mean, because we go back to how words have changed. I mean, like terrible, I mean, or awful used to mean like full of awe, not horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, broadening. We've talked about semantic broadening. We've talked about semantic bleaching. Mm-hmm. I mean, the language keeps changing. I mean, period.
I think that's so important. And that's so much of why I've become so much more relaxed with language is knowing how much things change and they're always changing, and and holding fast to some rule that is passing us by doesn't really do much except make us mad when we hear other people break that rule that is changing. It's changing. Like, that's, you know, tough luck. That's what's happening.
That's true. But that said, I'm going to go back to Kathy's statement with registers again too, though. I think we, at the same time where we can be permissive, I think we should be aware, and that's partly the purpose of this whole podcast and radio show, is that we should be aware of things that are technically correct and are not technically correct. And I do think with writing or with speech making, I mean, we talked about it. What was it? The Australian Prime Minister mispronounced hyperbole as hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
And she lost. And we all knew what she was saying when she said hyperbole, but she lost a lot of the audience because everyone was laughing at her, which is not a good thing. And I think when we do, if we say brung, for example, in a formal speech, like what Kathy said, like in the New York Times article, we don't hear, they didn't bring anything to the negotiating table. We hear brung and we go stop. And we don't, it doesn't fit Fletcher's point of communication, because it does like a brain fart. It stops us all. Yeah. We know, what's going on here?
Well, yes.
That's what I think too.
And that's, that's
it's
important.
It's a speed bump.
But if you use the incorrect conditional, you would not lose a large portion of the audience.
I don't think we would.
I agree.
And I think that's where we all agree.
Yeah.
We don't think it's that important,
mm-hmm.
even though it's interesting. It's very interesting, but it's not that important.
Yeah.
So if we would have done this better, oops.
Oh, Ross, you're brung. No, never mind. I couldn't think of a good brung. It's like, brang.
I brung the wrong joke to the table.
I brang the wrong thing to the table.
Well, if I had brang, here we go now.
Okay, we've lost 50% of our audience right there, Ross. And that's not hyperbole.
Okay, well, let's move on to, I guess, our main topic for today, if that one didn't turn out to be the main topic. We are talking about eponyms. I love eponyms.
Mm-hmm.
So do I. Eponyms are words that are derived from a person's name.
Right.
We've discussed them before. And we decided, Fletcher, it's time for an epic eponym quiz.
Ooh. This is good.
Yeah,
oh,
baby.
I'm excited.
Okay, we're going to give you two words. We're giving you couplets. And we're going to ask you, which one is an eponym?
Okay, great. And let's give an example. And this is a funny example because the name is pronounced wrong, or the word is pronounced wrong if we use the person's name. But like gerrymander is from a guy named Elbridge Gerry, G-E-R-R-Y. We changed the pronunciation. But that's an eponym. Like, it was derived from his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, Ross, do you want to give him the first couplet?
Mausoleum.
Mm-hmm.
Or hoodlum.
Mm.
You say hoodlum? I say hoodlum.
Hoodlum. I do too. Hood. Hoodlum.
Yeah, hoodlum. Hoodlum.
I should say hoodlum, but I say hoodlum. I don't know why. Yeah, that's wrong. See, but interesting enough, going back to our previous conversation, I said hoodlum. You guys immediately stopped and weren't thinking of which is the eponym. You were thinking of, like, why did Ross say
like
hoodlum?
An idiot. He's saying it wrong.
And that's where, to some degree, we do need rules. But anyway. Okay, mausoleum or hoodlum. I'm sorry. I don't know why. I would normally say hoodlum, actually, too.
And
whatever.
I need to know which one is the eponym. The one that seems very most likely to be... I'm not going to play any games here about whether you're trying to trick me. The one that seems most likely to be the eponym here is hoodlum. So I'm going to go with that.
That's wrong.
Really?
Okay.
That's interesting. I was so convinced you were going to do the correct one.
Yeah.
And because you're usually so correct, Fletcher. No, it's mausoleum.
Okay.
Which comes from an ancient Greek king, Mausolus. He was a he became the king. It was actually from the Greek a Greek city in Anatolia. He became the he was a Persian satrap. He was like worked for the Persians, or you know, basically under their rule. But he was the ruler, and he created one of the seven wonders of the ancient world.
The mausoleum at Halicarnassus. Yeah, I didn't know.
Yes, that's right.
Well, shows how much I ever looked into anything beyond learning the names of things. I didn't know that he created that, and that his name was, what did you say, Mausolus?
Mausolus. Yes.
Cool.
It's interesting, though. I could see where you it didn't occur to me, but hoodlum, because you'd think Hood.
Yeah.
You know, someone named kinda. Hood, like Bob Hood, kinda. Who was a rotten guy.
It's also
or
just,
Bob Hood.
It's also just one of those funny words. I mean, it sounds like kind of put together or made up from something, you know, hoodlum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's why mausoleum sounds like it could be derived from like some set of Greek words, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was why I thought what I thought.
That was a good guess. Although I like the hoodlum thing I think it might be from a German Bavarian dialect, Hudelump, which is ragamuffin.
I like that.
I like Hudelump.
Hudelump.
Yeah, I do too.
Okay. Next, we have the couplet is charlatan or gardenia.
Oh, boy.
Which they have no connection, I just realized. I was trying to like come up with things that were related, but
yeah.
Charlatan and gardenia?
We did a couple, though. I was really proud of
it. Yes.
No, it's good, though. I mean, they don't have to be related, but what you've done here is give me another word, charlatan, where it seems like I can't quite figure out like the parts. So it seems like that would be from somebody's name. But the other one, gardenia, is a flower, and those are often named after people. So you chose well here, even if they're not totally related. I'll go with gardenia.
And you're right.
I am right this time. Okay.
We were hoping that you would think it was from garden, which it is.
It is. That one flipped me out, that one.
Okay.
The gardenia is named after Alexander Garden.
Oh, how funny.
Which is such sounds like a fake
so
name.
Funny.
Doesn't sound like a cartoon.
I know, that one really got me.
Wow.
It sounds like a Batman villain. Oh, it's our Alexander Garden, the florist, you know? He was an 18th century Scottish naturalist who mainly worked in South Carolina, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And his fellow naturalist, John Ellis, named this genus of flowering plants after him.
Oh, that's lovely. Alexander Garden? Is that what you said?
Yeah. It's so weird. I mean, it's like so weird when people's names match.
Oh,
although
yeah.
Kathy and I would be Petrus, which is rock. So I guess it would be rock collectors or or stone cutters.
Geologists.
Geology. I like that better.
Yeah, charlatan came from the Italian charla, which is to chat or prattle.
Okay.
So.
Okay, that makes sense.
So it's a babbler.
Yeah.
Actually, the Italian was a quack first, and then the French made it charlatan, which meant a babbler, and there you have it.
Now we're going to move on to something more tasty. We have German chocolate cake or marmalade.
Is it from a person? Yeah, I think it is. It's the German chocolate cake. I know that it's German chocolate. Like, it's not, the cake is not German. It's German chocolate, and German is a person, I think, yeah.
Well, you got it, and this one got Kathy and me, because we both did not know, and I remember I went to my wife, I said, this is a really interesting one, and I gave her this, and she went like, yeah, German chocolate cake is from Samuel German.
Samuel
I was like,
German.
How did you know that? Kathy and I had no idea.
No, I thought it was German chocolate cake, like a German recipe. I don't know. But I mean, we've got Alexander Garden and Samuel German.
But I mean, he developed a sweet baking chocolate bar for Baker's Chocolate Company in 1852. And it was in the U.S. that he developed it. It wasn't even in Germany.
That's great.
So that one
how many Germans, though, would have been named German, Samuel German? I mean, that's like being like Ross United States, you know?
For all we know, that maybe he wasn't even from Germany. Maybe he was a French guy named German. Germain.
Well, he's American. Yeah,
but maybe the origin is French. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
You saw the name of the new prime minister in Hungary, right?
Yeah, like that is Ross United States.
Which you're right. It's like Hungary. Yeah. Hungary Ross prime Canada. Minister.
Oh, and that one, it was really interesting. There was a big hullabaloo, if you guys heard about, with BBC mispronouncing his name.
Oh, no.
No, I didn't hear it.
Oh, they apparently said Magyar.
Uh-huh.
And it should be pronounced more like Magyar, something like that. And there was a huge thing about it. Like, they should have pronounced it correctly. And then you go into, we talked about this at length. You know, Paris, should we pronounce it Paris or, you know, whatever.
Well,
but
the BBC mispronounces things all the time. They pronounce it in the way that the British have decided they're going to pronounce things, whether you like it or not.
Exactly. But I went online to look up, how do you pronounce Magyar in Hungarian?
And yeah.
The dangers of looking online. So I click on the first thing and it went Magyar in Hungarian. That doesn't sound right. So.
Okay. Next. This is less tasteful.
Good.
The two words are crap or lynch. They're just like, what a combo.
Yeah, much less tasteful. So I remember the whole thing with Thomas Crapper being the inventor of the toilet or something. We went through all of that, and I think it turned out that the word crap was not related to his name. So I'm going to go with lynch, but I don't know who lynch is.
Very good. You're right. You remembered very well.
Thank you.
Lynch was, they think, it was William Lynch, who was from Pittsylvania, Virginia. That's hard to say.
Oh, wow. Pittsylvania, Virginia.
Who was a vigilante. He was like, you know, led a committee to keep order there during the revolution. But then others say it was Charles Lynch, who was a Virginia magistrate, who was fined and imprisoned. But they think it's probably more likely that it was William Lynch.
Wow. But either way, it was a Lynch, like a person named Lynch. Yeah.
I didn't realize until we did this that crap itself meant more like chaff, like grain that was trodden underfoot in a barn. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
Mm.
The original word seems to be from like a medieval, you know, like trodden grain.
Like
I didn't realize
chaff.
That at all.
Yeah. Chaff. Like from chaff. Some
stuff that's tossed off, not feces.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I'm just fascinated by the fact, going back to Thomas Crapper, the fact that everybody accepts that. Because I always did until we did that other one.
Yeah. Although you got to admit, I mean, the guy works as a plumber. I mean, it's just too good. I mean, it's really like, you can't help it.
Again.
It has to be
it's just given to you on a platter, so to speak. One thing I also want to add regarding Lynch, this was an example of narrowing, semantic narrowing. It initially was just justice done without, you know, above the law, beyond the below the law, whatever, without authority of law. So it would be usually flogging or tarring and feathering, lynching was.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't become the notion of hanging until pretty much they think Ida B. Wells, you know of her, African-American journalist. They think she's the one who popularized it in that way, and it became solely that. You don't say lynching in terms of tarring and feathering anymore.
Not that people tar and feather anymore.
They don't. That's probably a good thing, too.
Yes, I'll say.
I'll be fairly definite about that one. So this is interesting, Fletcher. Okay, macadamia nuts or macadam?
Macadam.
Macadam. What am I doing? I'm like, no, it's macadam.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to correct you.
No, I'm like this, hello, I don't know what I'm doing. Macadamia nuts or macadam?
What is macadam?
It's pavement. Remember that we had a huge thing on pavement.
We did, I know. Isn't that weird?
No, we did. I'm actually sort of disappointed that you don't remember our discussion.
I don't remember you bringing up macadam at all. We may have had it
in our notes, Kath. Okay.
Yeah, I think
paving with gravel. It's paving with gravel.
Oh.
To make a nice smooth surface.
Yeah.
I mean, usually now they add tar with the gravel. But initially, it was just...
I know, we know a lot about it now. We're both... I know.
Initially, it was just the uniform stones and layers. Then they added the tar. So
it's a durable, smooth surface, stone-paved road.
Tarmac! That's what we talked
good.
About.
Oh, wait, we're tarmac.
We
yeah.
obviously need to rename this show to You're Paving It Wrong. We're experts. We're experts now.
I know.
Well, so you said macadamia nut, and my instant thought was, oh, that's named after somebody named McAdam. But then you told me there's a thing called McAdam, but I still want to go with macadamia nut. It must be named after somebody named McAdam.
Well, this was one of our cheapo trick ones. They're both named after a person. And this is the really interesting part, because we immediately thought, well, if they're both named after McAdam, it must be one guy. It wasn't.
I wish it were one guy.
Macadamia Nuts is John McAdam, who was a Scottish-born chemist, got a German expat named Ferdinand von Müller, named it after his colleague, who they discovered these nuts that are growing in Australia. And the macadam pavement is named after Scottish civil engineer John L. McAdam. Not Dr. John. John L. McAdam.
Both of them are John McAdam.
Yes.
And he developed Scottish.
And we thought they were the same person, but they were not. But he developed a method, I'm going to let this sink into Fletcher, of leveling roads and paving them with gravel. Mm-hmm. And he outlined the process in his pamphlet, Remarks on the Present System of Road Making. And as Kathy pointed out, and we can all remember this, originally it was a solid mass of stones of nearly uniform size laid down in layers, and McAdam did not approve of binding materials or rollers.
Oh.
That came in the 1880s, mixing tar in.
So we have a McAdam with a road and a McAdam with a nut. Mm-hmm. Two McAdams.
Two John McAdams.
Yeah, right. We should mention, we didn't say it on the previous show on McAdam, but tarmac is tar McAdam.
Yes. We talked about tarmac, but we did not mention the McAdam angle in the tarmac.
I think Fletcher is completely correct. You're paving it wrong will be our next show. Yeah.
This is great, though. I didn't know that's why they... I mean, tarmac seems like such a weird word, but it's tar McAdam. I had no idea whatsoever. Yeah. Of course, I had no idea what McAdam was, so I guess that makes sense.
It's so funny, though, but... I don't think I've ever thought about the word tarmac before today. Now.
You've never thought, you know what I mean, in this sense. I've never tried to figure out what it meant, but I've always thought, oh, that's a weird word.
Mm-hmm. I just always said tarmac.
Yeah, sure.
I always thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. The next duo is chauvinism or cabal.
I have always heard that chauvinism was named after, was it a person? Yeah, I think so. Or was it a group? Anyway, I'm going to go with that. It's like Chauvin, some French name. But is it a specific person?
It's a character. But they think that he was based on a real person who was Chauvin. The character was a soldier of Napoleon's army, and he was in a vaudeville thing. It was a character in the vaudeville thing, Le Cocard Tricolor. I'm doing it in an American pronunciation. Mm-hmm. But in a memoir about Waterloo... someone mentions one of our principal piqueurs named Chauvin, who had returned with Napoleon from Elba. So it might have been, the theatrical character might have been based on this Chauvin.
The other one, though, really sort of got me with cabal. Do you know the origin of the word cabal, Fletcher? It's really sort of interesting.
No, mm-hmm. Not at all.
It's based upon, you know, the Kabbalah in the old...
Kabbalah.
Kabbalah with the Hebrew secret writings, etc.
Sort of, yeah. Uh-huh.
But then it got into English because there were five intriguing ministers of Charles II's court: Clifford, Arlington, Buckingham, Ashley, and Lauderdale. And if you notice, C A B A A, you know, A L, and that's how it basically entered in English. The original word was there, and it comes from Kabbalah, etc. Uh-huh. But it came into English that way too. It was sort of cool.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's an acronym, like NASA or something.
Yeah. Wow. A more sinister NASA, but yeah.
You know, Kathy, you said tricolor, and we mentioned the BBC earlier. Do you know how the British say that? Or how they say it on the BBC, at least?
No, what, tricolor or something?
It is. It's yes.
Oh, my heavens. Yes, really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That is weird.
Okay. Tricolor. I picture a brook, a babbling brook, don't
a
you?
Trickler. Oh, sure, found. Right, yeah.
Okay, moving right along, we have shrapnel or pirouette.
Pirouette, is that what you said?
Yes, pirouette.
They both sound nice. I feel like I heard that shrapnel is named after a person, so I will go
you
with
got it.
Shrapnel. But pirouette is nice. Like, that's a good one to throw out there for me. Yeah.
We were proud of that one, actually, putting that word in. No, but you're right. It's General Henry Shrapnel. 1761 to 1842, and he invented a shell hollow cannonball filled with shot, which burst into midair and then threw it out.
Oof.
Yeah, it's interesting that initially it was the thing itself was shrapnel. Now we use shrapnel as the chunks that, you know.
Oh, initially it was the whole big thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The shell itself was shrapnel.
I see.
Okay, the next one's more fun.
This is a fun one. Yeah.
The duo are nachos or cantaloupe.
Oh, good one.
Nachos or cantaloupe.
Yeah, good one. Oh, boy. You really want it to be nachos, don't you? I'm gonna go with cantaloupe. It's another one of those, you know, you grew something and you named it after a person thing. So I'm going with that.
Should have stuck with your guts.
It's really nachos. I love it.
This is so cool. I love this one. Go on with this one, Kath. I love
this.
Yeah,
it was a Mexican maitre d', Ignacio Anaya, I guess. And legend, it's like the story goes.
Right, of course.
He was a waiter. There was a restaurant on the border between Eagle Pass, Texas, and Piedras Negras, Mexico. And the cook wasn't there, and people wanted to eat. So he improvised. He made up a dish with fried corn tortillas, shredded cheese, and jalapeno pepper. And he joked. He said, somebody said, what is it? People really liked it. So he said, oh, call it nacho special.
Yeah.
I hope it's true.
Yeah.
I really
Me
do.
Too.
Yeah, I like that.
It says that, I mean, they keep saying, I mean, it was put in newspaper stories, but who knows? But he ended up opening his own restaurant after a while, which I also like. So old nacho. I also love nacho as a nickname for Ignacio. Our first lawyer here was Nacho Barcelona, he was called.
Oh, wow.
Because he was based in Barcelona. We ended up not using him, but I just love the name Nacho Barcelona.
I know.
The cantaloupe actually came from a town, not a person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cantalupo in Italy.
It sounds to me like it would be, that one, I actually would have, if I didn't know better, I would have assumed it would be Cantaloupe too. It's like a name of a guy.
Yeah.
Paolo Cantalupo or something.
Right.
Yeah. Meet Nacho.
Paolo meet Nacho.
Nacho Barcelona. Yeah. You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org. or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.